Good morning, everyone. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Brenda. My home group is Sunday Night Hamilton, Massachusetts, just north of Boston. And welcome. How about this? We're starting it off 9 o'clock Friday morning. I'm really glad about that so I can relax and have some fun after. It's a huge honor to be asked to be here. Huge honor, and to have my friends sitting all up front. I love what Alcoholics Anonymous has done with me and people like me, so I'm glad to be here. Happy Canada Day to all of us. And we're, yeah. And now I get to introduce my first speaker, who is from here. He's from Ontario, and he's lucky enough to be having great accommodations. He's staying with his daughter just down the street, Jack P.
Thank you, Brenda. Good morning, friends. Most speakers would ask you, can you hear me at the back of the room? I'm going to ask you, can you see me? I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Jack Plate. Hi. It's a great place to be in, a great condition to be in, isn't it? I got to tell you what an accomplishment this is for me. And how incongruous it is that you're sitting there listening to me this morning. I retired 3 years ago and became a cardinal rule in my life. All my life I figured my day should start at noon, and now it does. It's religion with me that I don't get up before noon. And this is the middle of the night for me. And ask me to get up at about 6:30 in the morning to get ready for this thing, and be here and tell you about tolerance is about as long a stretch as you're ever going to find. A good friend of mine, I'm sure many of you know him, Peter Almighty God, I told him that I was asked to speak on tolerance at 9 o'clock in the morning, and he said, Christ, Jack, you haven't been accused of that in 40 years. He said, what are you going to talk about? I told you first of my disease and secondly my name. That's the order of importance in my life. And it's vital that I keep those two facts in that order. For some time in my life, while in or around, well, never in, but around Alcoholics Anonymous, it was important to me, my name, and hopefully the impression that it made on you and what it would net me. And secondly, somewhere in the background, lay my alcoholism. With the result that I've been drunk 40 times since I contacted Alcoholics Anonymous. Since I got those two facts in their proper perspective and accepted that my name and anything that it stood for, ever hopefully would stand for, was absolutely dependent on the rest of my disease, alcoholism, I have not found it necessary to ingest alcohol. And I tell you very quickly that neither have I taken any other mind-altering chemical into my body since July 16th of 1960. Hold it. I'm glad that impresses you and impresses the hell out of me. Because I didn't come here to get dry and wonder why. I came here to get sober. And I look sobriety up in Webster, and he talks about abstinence from intoxicants. And as an addendum, he talks about booze. And I have been steadily dry, steadily clean, and intermittently sober since 1960. I could tell you about my drinking story. It wouldn't serve any purpose. You've all been there. If you hadn't all the hell you could stand, you wouldn't be sitting here this morning. And that's my reason for being here. Tolerance is kind of a two-pronged sword for me. Because I think back at the 3 years where I was abusing and using and playing with the program, and I was allowed to live to tell about it, and you people tolerated me. That what I put you people through and what I subjected the program to and was allowed to stay alive and stay here is ultimate tolerance. And I hope I never lose sight of that. I hope I never refuse a newcomer the same courtesies that you afforded me. I'll tell you how extreme they got with me, though. I am probably the only speaker that you will listen to in the next great while who has ever been thrown out of Alcoholics Anonymous by Democratic vote. And you've got to be absolutely unbearable to make the grade. But I fixed you. I got drunk at you. You know, the alcoholic method, I'll fix you, I'll kill me, and you'll be sorry. You know. That's the way I function. But in your absolute tolerance, you taught me only, not only the need for it, but the value of it. Because it allowed me to live long enough to stop visiting and come in. And I'm fortunate, real fortunate, I consider myself, because I got here before Alcoholics Anonymous got sophisticated. I got here when they still told you the things you didn't want to hear, when you didn't want to hear them. And when you were off the wall, it took them over 30 seconds to clear that up, too. I remember, now you've got to know one of my defects. One of the big things that stood between me and sobriety was I was a genius. And with all my intellect, I walked up to a seasoned old-timer one night, and I said, Jack, I was just thinking. He said, oh? And he walked away from me. The inference, of course, being when the hell did that start? You know. And these were the guys that taught me. The guys that wouldn't tolerate my nonsense. The guys that were more concerned with saving my life and winning my vote told me the truth when it hurt. And I think, in general attitude, we've got to adopt some of that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm somewhat of a disciple, and most of you people, I think, are from south of here, and you'll understand what I'm saying. I'm somewhat of a disciple of John F. Kennedy, who said that he refused to be tolerant of intolerable situations. And I think in many cases, we of Alcoholics Anonymous have been persuaded that our tolerance should be extended to condoning, to accepting things that are not acceptable, like outside agencies dictating policies to us, and we should accept them because we're nice people. And I have a great fear of the outcome of that. I know other societies that had a million sober alcoholics, and they started accepting policies from outside and condoning and accepting, and they can hold their next meeting in any phone booth. And I'm very much afraid that that could ultimately happen to us, seep away at us without us realizing it. If we get confused about tolerance. I'm not going to pursue that any further, but I hope you can see that it's a deep, deep fear with me and not unjustified. I can give you many bona fide reasons for it. Trust? God, I trust you people. You saved my life. You reinstated me in the human race. You introduced me to a God. You put a marriage together for me. You gave me justification for living. The biggest thing that you've given me, I think, over the many years, is today I have the right to an opinion. Because my opinions today are based on convictions as a result of experience with you people. As a result of the teachings of my God. I came here 25 years old, absolutely burned out, no place to go in all the rest of my life to get there. 180 pounds, not a muscle on me. Doctors treating me for stomach ulcer and kidney condition that they both attributed to booze. They didn't know what the hell they were talking about, but they both attributed my ailments to booze. Absolutely void of principle. Absolutely void of direction, purpose. And you people have restored all these things into my life. My God, I trust you. I trust my God. Because he's the instrument, he's the author of my salvation. He's brought me here. He subjected me to you. But conversely, I won't tell you that you're keeping me sober. I won't tell you that God's keeping me sober. As many will. Well, all the time I was drinking, God wanted me sober, I'm sure of that. All the time I was drinking, you wanted me amidst you. Sober. Didn't work. Until I decided to cooperate, nothing worked. A lot of hard work. A lot of dedication. A lot of foot slogging to get in and staying sober. But my God, the rewards are phenomenal. Look around this room. Feel your aura in this conference center. I got out of the cab yesterday and it was like a blanket hit me. Well, I don't know, it's 40, 50, 60,000 people. A guy that I was hoping to see sometime this weekend is standing beside the cab when I got out of it. You tell me these are coincidences. I don't think so. A friend of mine who came to the program, he was an atheist. 5 years later, he's sitting in my basement, and he said, Jack, what's a coincidence? I said, I don't know, Bob, but I'm sure you're going to tell me. He said, one of God's little miracles that he doesn't want to sign his name to. I like that. This guy helped me in many ways. I'm talking about tolerance, intolerance, and purpose. I went to him one time, and I had just an overwhelming problem. I had a terrible inferiority complex. You know, I'm a typical alcoholic, egomaniac with an inferiority complex. But today I wanted to talk about the inferiority complex, and I went to Bob because, you know, he was pretty well balanced. And cried my tale of woe to him, told him how it infected me and how it showed up in my life and whatnot. I went on at great length. When I was all done, he looked at me. He didn't get anything very confused very often. He said, Jack, he said, I wouldn't worry about it. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, I don't think you've got a complex. And I said, I'm sorry. He said, you got no complex. You're inferior. They never let me get confused about things. He said, now I'm not telling you you're inferior by my standards or anybody else's. He said, I'm telling you, you're not living up to your own standards. And he said, until you do, anybody can make you feel inferior. Your kids can make you feel inferior. He said, start living up to your own standards. Get comfortable with your God, and you will never be made inferior. And that's where Alcoholics Anonymous had brought me. I have every reason to be in this room that any of you or anybody else has. I have every right to be as contented as I'm willing to work to be. I have every right to every bit of serenity that is available in here. There's absolutely nothing that is not available to me in sobriety if I'm willing to pay the price to get it. And that's the reason I had 40 drunks after I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I never had a slip. I got deliberately drunk 40 times. And the reason that I got drunk 40 times is I was never willing to pay the price to stay not drunk. This morning I'm willing to pay it. Thanks for listening.
None of us picked our subject matter this morning. I think our name goes into a hat and we get pulled out. They do send us a little set of directions in the mail, and one of the set of directions said the chairperson will share a little bit between each speaker. Now, we don't do that in Massachusetts. We find that a little rude. So, but I am, I am going to just share a little story because he started off and reminded me about the tolerance other people had for me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd really been thinking about this, and he said he was the only one maybe that was asked to leave. And so I, as I was sitting here, I remembered an occasion where I joined a group right away because there was this really cute guy, and I thought that he had winked at me. I started looking for a wedding gown, and then I joined his home group. And his name is Garth, and he died a couple of years on Christmas sober. And anyway, wonderful, wonderful experiences come flooding back. But anyway, I joined the group, and they go on commitments, and they invited me to go on this commitment. I was 90 days sober. And they took me to the public detox. And I thought, I must be pretty important. I must have a pretty powerful message. You're taking me right to the top. I'm going to teach these people. I'm serious. This is all serious. This is what happened to me. So we went to the detox, and in my early recovery, I was a bit angry, confused, terrified. And when it came my time to speak, I did. And I said the F word with feeling. I used it as a verb, an adjective, a noun, a proposition. I really wasn't aware of it. It was my first speaking engagement. And at the end of the meeting, Jack, the people in the pajamas and the slippers at the public detox held a group conscience. And their group conscience was that the next time my home group brought me to this commitment, that I not be allowed to speak because I was too offensive to them. True story. And I probably, during this whole entire weekend, will not even think of that word again. And that's like a miracle. That's like a miracle. There was one guy that was there that night for years. He counted. He said, "Brent, only 36 tonight, you're doing better." You know what I mean? His name is, I didn't end right away, you know what I mean? It took a while to get this gal back on track. But anyway, that was my story, and my home group tolerated that behavior and loved me in spite of myself, and I went for the next 5 years every Thursday night, and I think I can count on one hand maybe twice I missed that commitment with my home group, and eventually they trusted me again to speak to those people. But anyway, that's my little story that identifies myself with Jack. Now, I'm sure you all have your program. No, please, you have your program in front of you. And there's a gal there listed as Louise M. Well, she's not here. But her alter ego showed up, and her name is Louise.
Hi, my name is Lucille Louise Celeste Rivers Miller. And I mention that because I chose Louise. My alter ego decided not to come. And I'm quite sure you'd be glad to know that you wouldn't want to meet her. My name is Louise, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. My dry date is March 26, 1971. And I look out at this room and I think about the time I was speaking in Seaside, Oregon. And it was amazing. I got up and introduced myself, but the glare was in my face. And I looked out and I said, "Is there any one of us out there?" There was 2,500 white faces out there. And I saw five my color out there. And I just wanted to know if there was anyone out there this time. But coming into this program, I was a very, very upset person. You could not tell me anything. And trust? Oh, no. I only trusted the people I drank with. If you were sober and telling me something to do, like put my bowel down or something like that. I remember a time that I was in New York, and a person swiped my bowel. Now, that was wrong. That was wrong. They took my bowel, and in New York, the apartment buildings were very high. And instead of walking down the hall to the person's room to get my bowel, I decided to go out on the ledge to his room. So naturally, the fire department and police and everyone was called, and they were yelling up to me, "Don't jump." I said, "Who in the hell is going to jump?" And the policeman at the window reaching his hand out, telling me, "Come back in, don't do it." Do what? Don't jump. All I wanted was my bowels. So those are just some of the things that you do. Like trusting yourself to get up in the morning and go to work. Now, I was a functioning alcoholic. I went to work every day. And I remember going to work one morning and coming home and going to bed. And I got up to go back to work the same day. So what I did, was call the job and ask did Lucille come to work that day. And they said, yes, she got off at 2:30. So that was to find out where I was that day. But those are some, it's a good thing people kept records, you know, because I would never have known where I was. My family tolerated me. When you talk about tolerance, my family tolerated me because I was obnoxious, and that's true. I think that word can be used, obnoxious. I was terrible. And they took care of me. They tolerated me. They put up with everything I did. And I looked the word up, tolerance, in the dictionary. And tolerance is something where people can... you do a whole lot of wrong, but people put up with you. They put up with you. They don't have to, but they do. And that was the thing about it. Even my job, because I was a good worker, they tolerate me. So, oh, Lou can do it. Let her do it. Regardless of how much I drank, I was on the job at the time. I drank every day, 8 days a week. And the reason I use the word 8 days a week, because I needed the eighth day to find out what the hell happened to the other seven. But I found out that that was not it. And when I came in, I finally got really, really drunk one day. And my sister, the only one, the older sister, was the only one that would really put up with me. The rest of the family took my kids and says, we can't. We'll tolerate the children. Can't tolerate her anymore. I trusted my older sister, and that was one person that was something else with me. I trusted her implicitly. She was good. And the reason I came into AA was because she went to the doctor one day, and she came home. I came home drunk. And she told me, stop sleeping on the couch, go to my room. And me being under the influence, hauled off and slugged her. And my brother-in-law came in and said, what you do that for? She's sick. She'd been to the doctor that day and found out she had an enlarged heart. And I had slugged her right in the chest. That was the night I picked up the phone and put my trust in you. I called and laid down for the phone, and she said, I asked this lady for the name of Alcoholics Anonymous. Where was it? And it was a telephone operator. And I was screaming and hollering. And she said, stay on the phone. And to this day, I wish I could find that operator. But they finally got me hooked up with AA and a lady named Helen. Never will forget her. She came out to the house. That was when you came to the house two by two. One would make the call and the other one would argue with you. That's why. And it was great. That was it. This was great. I argued with this one, and the other one had coffee. I don't drink coffee. But it was great. That's how I came into AA, with a slug to my sister, bless her heart. But she tolerated me. Then when I came in here, you learned to trust me. Jack said he got thrown out of alcohol. I got fired for making coffee. They gave me the thing of washing the cups and making coffee. And the morning I made the coffee, an old-timer came in. I never will forget him. He's been around a long time. And he, "What's this?" And I said, "I made the coffee." He said, "You're fired." I said, "That is terrible. You get fired for making coffee." But I learned a lot being in this program. I learned how to make friends, how to trust each other. I didn't trust anybody, not as far as I could throw a chair. And women, no way. When I was drinking, all my friends were men. All were men. I did a lot of things in my life, and it wasn't selling shoes at Penny's. So that covers the whole front right there. I like that because I don't have to explain nothing to you. People put up with me a long time. But after coming into this program, it's like Brenda said, I did service work. I got to be DCM, and I got to run around doing 12-step work, which is very, very good. I learned to trust, and it was all because of you teaching me things that I was hard-headed. I had a sponsor who told me, she would pick me up for the first 30 days. She picked me up and took me to meetings. I mean, 30 days. And the 31st day, I'm waiting for her. I didn't make that meeting. And so she asked me, "How come I didn't make the meeting 11 o'clock on Friday morning?" I said, "You didn't pick me up." "What did I say that for?" I said, "I trusted you to pick me up." She says, "And you trusted yourself when you were drinking to get where you wanted to go. I will not pick you up again, and you will be at the meetings." I said, "You're mean." I made all the next meetings. She was the type of person to tell you when, where, and what. But I loved her dearly. I loved her dearly. Because being the hard-headed person I was just that way. I needed everything she taught me, and it was good. It's like God made the world and he said, "This was good." He made daylight and he said, "This was good." And that was her. Everything she told me was good. That was nothing else. And I remember after I had been sober for a while, my kids came to visit me. And they looked at me so. And my old son says, "Can you trust her? Is she going to stay at home this time? Or is she going to take fly the coop again?" I didn't fly the coop that time, so they began to trust me. And they began to love me. And I only had one child to tell me that I didn't do what I was supposed to do. And I had a family conference after that. I told my sister, "What happened yesterday is gone. You accept me today for what I am, not for what I was. And if you cannot do that, there's the door. I love you unconditionally. But I cannot turn the clock back and undo what I did. Now either accept me today for what I am or go away." And that is where I am. I accepted this morning. I'm like Jack. I don't like getting up unless it's a necessity. The clerk at the hotel rang the phone at 6:30. Wake up call. I said, "Why did she do that?" Then I remembered I was supposed to be here at 9. I said, "Oh, my God." But when I came in here the other day, I walked from my hotel over here, and I said, "I will not make it Friday morning if I have to walk." And that was it. But this morning at 6:30, I hit the floor after about 5 minutes pulling the cover up over my head. And I made it to the shower and everything. And my roommate, I don't know what's her problem with making coffee. It's just not right. It's like this little Bob commercial. I know you've seen this little Bob where his mother buys this Quizno sandwich, and she eats, and he says, "You know what I had for dinner? String peas." He says, "You know, I love the woman, but that was wrong." And it's the same thing with her coffee. It's wrong. I don't know about you, but when I came into this program and learned to trust you all to tell me what was right and what was wrong, and I listened. I've learned to listen to the old-timers. I've learned to listen to young people who come in and know it all. And I've tolerated that. That's tolerance. I sponsored a girl one day, a young lady, and we were at a meeting, and everyone had did that little talk, and we were on our way out. She says, "Louise, I want to talk to you right now." I said, "I don't feel like talking." She said, "If you don't talk to me, I'm going to get drunk." I reached in my pocket, and I had $6 $1 bills. I said, "Here you are, honey. Go ahead on and get drunk." She's sober today. She said, "You wouldn't dare." "Yes, I would, because I don't feel like talking to you today." The problem is, she learned something from me being strict, which I had learned from my sponsor. And if you're in this program, a sponsor is the best friend you can have. I know some people don't like their sponsors after they first meet them, but they are pretty darn good to have around in a crisis. I call them at 2:30 in the morning. You know, that's what really can get them upset. Call them at 2:30 in the morning. "I need to talk to you." "What?" That's trust for them not to come over and knock you down. I'm very grateful to be here in Toronto, meeting all these nice people, especially Jack over there, who don't get up till 12 o'clock in the daytime. That's when you done worked all your life and can retire. Me, I work through AARP, you know, for seniors. And I work for United Way, and I listen to a lot of problems every day. And I can understand why a lot of people or where they are today who don't want to hear what you have to say. But looking out at you all today and looking at the capacity of this room, it's great, great to be here. I have a son who's someone I'd like to remind you of, your children, when you got children. I remember him coming in one day full of that other stuff and trying to knock my door down. And I went crazy. You would have thought I'd had a drink. I only shot at him 5 times. And my pistol jammed, and I got the right. And he asked me later on, after the police had came, he asked me, he said, "Mom, would you have shot me?" I said, "Trust me." He learned to trust me after that. Today he's done okay. My kid says, "Please don't make Mom mad." They started calling me Annie Oakley. But things got better. Things got better. My family and I is all in shape. Most of us been sobered up. I had once, I'll tell you this and I won't keep you all sitting there gawking and for Roger to get up here. I had a sister, all of us in our family, I think cancer runs in our family. My drinking buddy, my sister Hattie, she was diagnosed with cancer in 1989. And we took her to the cancer research program because she drank like I did. And they told us we couldn't do anything for her after 3 months, and they brought her home. And there's enough people in my family to give you 24-hour service without calling in an outside nurse. We have nurses in the family and all that. But anyway, she was dying, and she told us that and to leave her alone. And she said, "Bring me a pint of Hennessy and a package of Pall Mall cigarettes. And my other sister started screaming and hollering she can't have it. I should give it to her. And she's sitting beside the bed and she says, I just want to look at it. She said, I just want to look at it. And I use this word, please don't be offended. She said, I just want to look at the shit that got me in the shape I am today. And she let it sit there. And we all looked at her. About 36 hours later, she was dead. But just goes to show you that it was a sense of humor with her that Hennessy and those Pall Mall cigarettes got her in the shape she was. But cancer runs in my family. Alcoholism runs in my family. But a lot of us found AA in my family. We found you. And you brought us, as they say, out of the mire of clay to where we are today. And when you need a friend, and when I need a friend, when I was in the hospital, the people said, who are all those people coming to see her? Who are they? And we're having an AA meeting in my room. And I even had the doctor sit there and talk with me for an hour about AA and the fellowship of AA. But make sure your doctor is sober before you go to the anesthesia. You never know. Because one of the guys said he did surgery, and they told him what a nice job he did, and he said his patient trusted him, and he said, when did I do the surgery? He didn't remember it. He'd operated completely in a blackout. This is a true story. He'd operated completely in a blackout. So I said, oh, my God, I'm alive. I think my doctor was sober. I asked him that next day. I said, were you okay when you did the surgery? He said, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. I want to drink after surgery. I said, thank you, dear. But for the grace of God, I'm standing here today before you sober, loving everything I do, and I make long-range goals. I trust in God that I can make long-range goals. I tolerate a lot of the things I do because some things I do is unprecedented. They're not right. But I'm like Bob now. They're not right. But I make long-range goals, not necessarily to be carried out, but I make them. I take one day at a time. I say, well, I made one more day towards that goal. I've made so many plans in my life that didn't be carried out. But right today, I can look forward to something this afternoon, possibly, meeting some more people. They gave us this great big book there. I have met people all over here, and everyone walking up saying hello and putting their arms around you. Strangers. People who don't even speak your language, you know. That is what AA is all about. It's bringing us all together. That is what trust is all about, bringing us all together. That is what tolerance is about, putting up with each other. Although some of us can be obnoxious, you know that. We can be that way. But today, we are sober. Today, we have sobriety. Today, we have serenity. Today, we are at peace with ourselves and our neighbors. We are one big happy family. With that, I'm going to say, I love you all, and thank you.
I hate this, Pat. I'm supposed to share a little between the speakers. I think I let you know that earlier. That was in the letter they sent us. So anyway, when Louise was speaking, she started talking about family. And I knew that was going to happen, because every time I go to even a little convention, that family stuff comes up. And I always believe that happens because we're in a safety net when that stuff comes up, and it's a little bit easier because we know, you know, my family was destroyed by my drinking, and I had lost the right to parent my children. They had been removed by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and given to my husband, who at the time I didn't think really should have them either. But anyway, God is good. He made the right decision, and I know that today. So it allowed me, that whole thing, it allowed me my process in early recovery to go to tons of meetings. I mean, just tons of meetings. And I probably, and when the time that this little story happened, I was probably going about 21 meetings a week. I was probably sharing at almost every one of those meetings. I was tolerated. But I really believe I was given a gift of a pink cloud, and I just loved living sober from the day it happened. You know what I mean? Every day was a good day compared to where I came from. So that was my message. I can't apologize for it, but I had a lot of people in my life because of it. So I'm going to 21 meetings a week. I'm sponsoring about 12 or so women. And I'm thinking, you know, the family's getting repaired here. So I'm also working, and I'm working in a restaurant, and my son is also working in the restaurant. It's Mother's Day Eve. And we had all finished doing, I think it was a wedding, and he was a bar back, and I was 2.5 years sober. And so the conversation after work was with all of my employees, I mean, the people that I worked with, was, what did you get, John, what did you get your mom for Mother's Day? And he said, she's not my mother. I'm 2.5 years sober. You know what I mean? She's not my mother. She was never a mother to me. I have another mother. That was the woman my ex-husband married 2 days after the divorce. And I wasn't doing all that well with that either, I can tell you. You know what I mean? And it was 11:30, and there was a 12 o'clock midnight meeting in the town that I live in. Thank God. And actually, that 12 o'clock meeting was started by my sponsor's son. And I went there regularly. It's a place called the White Whale. And down, I mean, God is really good to me. I was supposed to give my son a ride home, but you know what I mean? I just got in the car. You know what I mean? I figure at this point, if I'm not his mother, somebody else can pick him up. So I got in the car, and I went to the White Whale. And once again, I was loved until I could love myself that night. Taken out by my friend Ron to breakfast. I think we stayed out all night, and I ended up at the Grey Cross Club the next morning, and I didn't change my clothes, and somebody had gotten an idea about Ron and I. Not the case, but... But anyway, the process with that is that I just had to do AA, and I just had to, you know, share with a sponsor and read the book and go to the meetings and play with my group. And almost 3 years ago, which is fast forwarded about 15 years, my son called and asked me to come to the hospital because his wife, whose name is also Brenda, was having a baby. And I have the love and respect of both of my children today. And my son wanted me to be there. And I got there, and things were, you know, going along, just the way they go along. And I decided, since she had brought some lotions and potions, that I would start some foot massage. And that's kind of something that I do. And she loved it, and so I stayed for the next 4 hours. And then the doctor showed up, and he said, it's time to push. And they were getting people to hold legs up in the air, and one nurse grabbed one leg, and they asked for help, and there was nobody else in the room. So I said, I'd be glad to help if she wants me to stay. And my son was her coach, so he had his hand on my shoulder, and the doctor kept saying, Brenda, push. I was pushing so hard. I was pushing, and we got a baby. And a year ago next month, we got another baby, and I was on the opposite leg. So Reese and Marley came into this room with a sober grandmother, and I get to babysit them a lot. I have another grandbaby, and he's just the light of my life. He was a one-night stand. My son went out drinking. He met a girl that had had a few drinks, and 9 months later, we got a baby. And you know what? That thought that was going to be the most incredible, horrific thing that ever happened to me, and it's turned out to be the miracle of miracles. The miracle of miracles. And so I'm asking you to trust the process that Alcoholics Anonymous gives us. Just trust the process. If it ain't happening now, don't give up. He used to say, stick around until the miracle happens. And I say, stick around until the next miracle happens. And I'd like to introduce my next speaker, who is from New York. New York, and he's Roger T.
Wow. Morning, everybody. My name is Roger T, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Oxford Groups in the Upper West Side of New York City. And we meet on Mondays and Wednesdays at 7:30. And if ever you come to New York City, you'll be very welcome there. My sober date is June 17th, 1994. And I stand here amongst... Thank you. And I stand here speaking after these wonderful speakers who had so much more time than me. And I'm honored and awed to be here. Earlier this year, I got a letter from the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it said, and I love the way they worded this, it said, please accept a loving invitation on behalf of the General Service Board, United States and Canada, to be one of the speakers at a meeting. Wow. 11 years sober, and I'm speaking at an international convention? I can't believe that. The other back end of the message, back end of the letter, said something that was very important to me. It said, ever mindful of AA's primary purpose, we ask all speakers as they, and I love the way they worded this, as they weave the selected topic into their talk to focus on their experience, strength, and hope as it relates to their recovery in AA from alcoholism. So that's what I'm going to do this morning. I'm going to weave the selected topic into my talk using my experience, my strength, and my hope. My experience is that I'm a drunk. We all know the stories. We've all lived them. Mine happened in a different language, in a different country. Well, the same language, but a different accent. In a different country. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor gave me a copy of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I first read that book, there's some words on page 21 going through to 22 which describe the alcoholic. And I read that, and I was amazed. Somebody who wrote this 9 years before I was born, 10 years, nine years and 9 months before I was conceived, wrote down on paper in black and white what I was like. Absolutely amazing. One of the descriptions is that sometimes we drink to the point where we can become dangerously antisocial. Now, coming from a good home in England, neither of my parents drank. I think my father had a beer at Christmas once in a while, and my mother drank, you know, that much port, and she was singing. Dangerously antisocial. I mean, that's, you know, that puts me up there in a league with Charles Manson, Jeffrey Dahmer, my friend Rocky. And I mention that because everyone has stood up here today and told a story about being asked to leave or ejected from somewhere or being told not to come back. This is a country that I know, unfortunately, we haven't had any this season, but this is a country that loves hockey. And sometime in 1979, my friend Rocky and I went to a Rangers hockey game in Madison Square Garden, and New York fans are noted to be a little more rowdy probably than others. And at that game, in which I believe New York were playing the Penguins, both Rocky and I were asked to leave. I count that as one of my great feats in life, that I was asked to leave a Rangers hockey game. I think it was at the point when we both stood up on our seats and mooned the ice. When we were sitting in the suit seats all the way down by the ice, that probably was the reason. So that's one of the being asked to leave stories that I have to tell. I'm not going to tell any more because most of us have had them. But I will tell one a little bit later, just a part of that. So my experience is that I'm a drunk. I started drinking when I was 16 and I drank until I was 48. That's 32 years. And in those 32 years, I did not have a problem. There was not a problem with my drinking because I drank with people who drank like me. I drank with people who I thought drank more than me, so therefore I didn't have a problem. This meeting is about tolerance and trust. I believe that I had a fairly high tolerance for alcohol consumption. whilst I was carrying on this tolerance for alcohol consumption, fewer and fewer people came to trust me. I was not, at the end of my drinking, I was not a trustworthy person. And my tolerance for other people was off the scale, but all the way down. I really didn't like anybody. I didn't want you to tell me what to do, because I knew better. I used to drink in a bar in New York City, and there were a bunch of us that once in a while people stopped coming to the bar and we never saw them again. And one of these people was a young lady called Kathy. And Kathy used to live around the corner from the bar. And we were sitting in the bar one night about 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, luckily bars in New York City are open till 4, so there's plenty of drinking time available. And Kathy was walking by the bar, walking her dogs. And we turned to each other as we were clinking our glasses and drinking the next drink, saying, you know, it's a shame about Kathy. It's a great shame. But she had a problem, because she used to go home from the bar and sit at home and drink alone. 5 years later, what am I doing? Or however many years it was, I'm not sure. What am I doing? I'm sitting at home alone drinking, because that's the way I want to drink. That was the way I needed to drink. That was the way I thought it was going to be for the rest of my life. I absolutely did. But that changed. That changed one beautiful day, June 17th, 1994. I was passed out on the floor in my apartment between my couch and my coffee table. And my wife at the time very unceremoniously kicked me, told me it was time to get up and go to work. I was still working, so I couldn't really have a problem because I had a house, a car, went on vacations, I dressed nicely, but I didn't have a problem. You know, lying in my own vomit in bank doorways at 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, realizing I had to go to work the next day, was, as far as I was concerned, not a problem. That was tolerable to me, and I thought nothing of it. Anyway, she woke me up that morning, and she said the words that strike fear and dread into the hearts of all men. When you come home tonight, we have to talk. Being relatively intelligent, I figured I know exactly what that means. That means that she's going to kick me out the house, my ass is brass, excuse my language, and I've got to do something about it. So I literally got up that morning, and I didn't have a vodka and orange juice for breakfast. I didn't go to the bar at lunchtime. I didn't go to the bar after work. I didn't leave work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and run downstairs and have a couple of quick ones saying I'm going to the bathroom and then reappear back in my office. I didn't do that day. And I went home and I said to my wife, well, see, I know what the problem is. It's all been sorted out. I'm not drinking. And it's all over. What's for dinner? And that was my so-called cavalier attitude that I had. I didn't drink for almost 2.5 months. Detoxed in my house, thought I had the worst case of flu in the world, didn't know anything about alcoholism, didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And 2.5 months later, I am crazy as a bedbug. I am more miserable than I was at the end of my drinking. I was more miserable when I lived in, back in when I lived in London and my second wife committed suicide. I was more miserable that time than when my children were taken away from me forcibly and I was never allowed to see them again. I was more miserable that day than I think I'd ever been in my whole life. But I knew what the solution was. The solution was I'm going to get myself committed. I'm going to pot around in paper slippers and work in the garden, and the doctors are going to give me medication and everything's going to be fine because I'm crazy. Luckily for me, though, somebody had decided that I should call my friend Richie, who used to be my bartender at that place where I mentioned before. And I called Richie, and I hadn't spoken to him in 8 years, because before the last time I saw Richie, I was ejected from his wedding for being drunker than his mother, which he claims is a great feat. Richie took me, well, he didn't actually take me, he sent me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I sat in that meeting, and here's where the strength of my story comes in. I sat in that meeting knowing full well that it wasn't going to work, absolutely, positively it wasn't going to work, didn't know anything about it, but it wasn't going to work. And the kicker at the end was we all stood up, and in New York we do this, we stand up, we hold hands, and we pray. Okay, this is definitely not going to work for me. But I was drowning, I was dying, and I had no idea. And somebody somewhere threw me a life raft, and that life raft was Alcoholics Anonymous. The book, the program, and the fellowship, all three parts. A man came into my life, his name is Ted, and he's my sponsor. He's sober 12 months more than me, and hopefully today he still is, and he's still my sponsor. What he did for me, he took me through the steps that I'd seen on the shades in meetings, and he pointed out to me that there is a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's written down. We're given instructions. When I was sent this letter, I was given instructions as to what to do, and that's what I'm doing today. I'm following instructions. I trust that if I follow those instructions, something good's going to come out of it. And I believe it has in the last 11 years that I've followed those instructions in Alcoholics Anonymous. My hope is that each and every day I stay sober, and each and every day I can do something through God's power to help another alcoholic, whether it's just turn up at a meeting, whether it's speak at a meeting, whether it's say hello to somebody that I've never seen before. So there is my experience, strength, and hope. My tolerance barometer is really conditioned by how spiritually fit I am. Yesterday my tolerance level for people was not as good as it should have been. And there are some people in this room that have felt that. Today my tolerance level for people is a lot better, because I did today what I didn't do yesterday. I started out my day by prayer. I started out my day praying to a God of my own understanding that I was shown was deep down within me. It wasn't necessarily the God of my parents. It wasn't the religion of my parents. It was there, readily available for me, and all I had to do was trust what my sponsor was telling me and accept what he said. There are three times the word tolerance is really used in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I carry my book around with me, one version or another, because I never know when I'm going to need it. Because I recognize my big book of Alcoholics Anonymous as my guidebook to life. It's what keeps me going on the straight and narrow. And it says here on page 70, we have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill towards all men, even our enemies. For we look at them as sick people. We regard these people as our enemies because of things we thought, imagined or real, as it says in the book, they did to us. So we have to get rid of that resentment and understand that yes, maybe people did do things to us that hurt us, but they were sick, and we are sick too. We are not prone to not be sick. The next mention of tolerance in the big book, it says, so we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. What an amazing thing. What an amazing thing. What an amazing way of living life. Patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. that kindness and love that people in Alcoholics Anonymous show each other. 1999, I was 5 years sober, and my wife was re-diagnosed with a cancer that she had had for many years before. And I was very angry. I had no tolerance for this. I had no patience with God. And I didn't know what to do. And I asked my sponsor, what do I do? And he said, all you can do is pray that you have the tolerance and patience to trust in what the doctors do, because you're not a doctor and you can't do anything, just available to be there. And that patience, tolerance, kindliness and love showed itself to me on April the 8th, 1999, when I had a memorial service for my wife, who was 49 years old. Over 250 people were at that funeral home, most of them from AA, some of them from Al-Anon, which is a program that my wife had devoted herself to in the previous 5 years. They helped me get through what I couldn't get through myself. And I asked my sponsor again, why did this happen? And he said, I had no idea. And at that point, I really wanted to not listen to him anymore, because I wanted him to give me the answer. 3 years later, I'm at a meeting in the East End of Long Island, and a woman comes in and shares at the meeting that her husband has just been diagnosed with inoperable brain cancer, and she didn't know what she was going to do. I went up and I spoke to that woman at the end of the meeting and told her my story of how I'd survived my partner dying. And then I called my sponsor and I said, now I know what happened. Thank you. Trust. Like I said at the beginning, I wasn't considered really a trustworthy person. I believe that I can be. Whoops, and I've lost the page. I believe that I can be now. I trusted in my sponsor that what he was telling me was going to be good for me. I trusted in what I did would allow the promises in Alcoholics Anonymous to come true for me. I trusted in a God that I did not understand at first. I trusted in each and every one of you to help me when I needed it. And there's a very good friend of mine from California sitting in this room, and his name is Mickey B. And one of the things that he does is he makes acronyms of various words in Alcoholics Anonymous. And last night, before I went to sleep, I came up with this one for trust. T-R-U-S-T. Today, rely upon spiritual thoughts. My name is Roger T. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you very much.
Could somebody write that down for me? I have no pen up here. I think just listening today has reminded me of, you know, we're all here because we want to be here. You know, we don't probably have any real newcomers here today. But I think we all talked about how people tolerated us in the beginning. So I think what I'd like to say, because I'm supposed to wrap it up now, is that as we go from here to our home groups, and hopefully we all have a home group, that we bring that spirit, that we tolerate that newcomer in any condition, that we have our hands out, and we practice that patience. And I would just like to thank my speakers, Jack, Louise, and Roger. I would also like to thank my two backup speakers, because they told me in the letter to have a backup speakers just in case. And my backup speakers today were June and Roley, and June is my sponsor, who has all of that stuff that you just talked about, the patience, the tolerance, the trust, and the love. And she has shared that trusted AA experience that she has accumulated over the last, I'm going to try to guess, 27, 28 years with me. so that I can be the woman that I am today. And she was here when I got here. I have known her since she was an infant, and she was here when I got here. And you know what? I did trust, because I knew her story. And she was at the first meeting I ever went to, and I had known her since I was a kid. And I thought, if AA can do this for her, maybe there's a shot for me. And she had the good fortune of staying in this program and meeting a guy who she eventually married. And he's my best friend in Alcoholics Anonymous, my best male friend in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he has tolerated me, I want to tell you. I'm on his dance card. I'm on his dinner tab. And it's been a long time that I've been there, because the God of my understanding has other plans in my relationship areas than I do. One time I went over to their house because something was going on with me, and my house needed to get better. And we thought it was going to be a clear shot, and I think I was having a surgery or something. And I went to stay a couple of days, and 4 months later, I took my bag and I went home, and it's probably the best 4 months of my life. And they told me that I'm no trouble. Can you imagine that? Somebody telling me I'm no trouble? And I also today, when I was sitting here looking at my sponsor, thinking, she should be up here, you know what I mean? She should be up here. I was thinking, I remember the day she said, I would trust Brenda with my life. So for where I came from, and I really didn't get a chance to tell you a drunkologue, but where I came from, that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope you all get a chance to experience those miracles and the next one down the line as you stay here and as you go wherever you're going from here. And let's say the Lord's Prayer together.
Father.